We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from Wild Turkey Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Let's tune in to their one-on-one with Jamal, a real bartender from Old Fourth Ward in Atlanta.
I really get into the backstory of whatever I'm pouring. Out of respect, there are literally years of experience behind these bottles. Wild Turkey, same recipe since 1942. If you want a true classic, this is what you want to order.
Wild Turkey. Wild Turkey Distilling Company, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Copyright 2020, Campari America, New York, New York. Never compromise, drink responsibly.
Ace is a place with the helpful hardware, folks.
At Ace, your backyard's right in our backyard, which means we have hand-picked products that are right for the birds in your neighborhood, like premium bird seed, suet, birdhouses, and feeders. Stop by your local Ace and get everything you need to attract the birds you want, including Ace Wild Bird Food, on sale now. Now through Tuesday only, when you buy two 20-pound bags of wild bird food, get a third bag free. Only at Ace, the helpful place. Offer valid through February 28th at participating stores.
Hey, it's Flo, and this is my impression of a tech-savvy royal family. Yes, yes, ever since the palace became Wi-Fi enabled, it's become so easy to use the Name Your Price tool on Progressive.com.
I do agree, my queen. Simply telling it what we want to spend and seeing all our policy options, I'll send a screenshot to Duke.
The Duke of Kent.
No, my friend Duke. We're in a group chat together. LOL.
It's easy to find insurance that fits your budget with the Name Your Price tool at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, brought to you by DraftKings.com, the leader in daily fantasy sports. Use the promo code RotoWire when you deposit for a free contest entry today. It is Wednesday, November 3rd, 2015. I'm Jake Letarski. You can follow me at Twitter at JakeSki52. Here alongside Eric Couturier, you can give him a follow at ETCat30. Eric, it's one of the biggest weeks of the season for injuries. How are your teams holding up?
Well, this week was pretty crappy. Had Le'Veon Bell on one league, so he's done. At least I was able to pick up D'Angelo. This is a league in which I can actually make claims like right during game day. Instantly. So I made a claim instantly on D'Angelo, so that'll be happening sometime today, Tuesday. Otherwise, it was an 0-4 week, so yeah. Not good.
I had a tough week myself, went 2-3. A couple of tough breaks, also a couple of injuries, that type of thing. Happened to lose Keenan Allen for the season now, by the way. Kidney lesion out for the year, placed on IR. Happened to lose Keenan Allen in the same league.
where I lost Jamal Charles, and it's just looking rough there, so I can almost scratch the playoffs on that one. But I still have two, maybe three leagues where I'm pretty optimistic about the playoffs. Are you in the same boat? Think you can recover?
I think in three of four, I still have a legitimate chance of making it. And I just looked, and I thought I lost in one league, but I actually pulled out a victory.
Ooh, so you got one.
So 6-2, 5-3, 5-3 are the leagues that I'm, you know, hoping to make the playoffs in right now.
Well, we'll dive further into our woes a little bit into the show as we as we pick up with the waiver wire talk this week as usual. But first, real quick, this podcast is now available on both iTunes and Stitcher, and Eric and I, as well as the entire rest of our crew, would really appreciate it if you could take just a moment to leave us a 5-star rating review if you happen to be listening on those platforms. This is the Waiver Wire podcast, but as usual, we're going to start with Monday Night Football recap because it was quite the eventful game on Monday night. Again, that was a tight finish in overtime. The Colts 26, the Panthers 29, pulling out the win at home right from underneath Andrew Luck here. Overall, it was a pretty sloppy game, both literally and figuratively. We saw a lot of downpour in the whole first half. 7 combined turnovers throughout the game. The Colts did erase a big comeback later, but the real story of this game for me was watching Andrew Luck struggle so mightily early on. He only had 40 passing yards through the first three quarters of this game. Now, Eric, do you think... I mean, what can we blame here? Is it protection? Is he maybe playing hurt? Is it just the conditions? Does he not have the weapons? Like, it's about time to maybe consider stop making excuses for Andrew Luck and try to explain this.
Yeah, and when it comes to that, you would think they'd actually put him on the injury report so they can actually start blaming something. We know that he missed two games earlier in the season with a shoulder injury. Mm-hmm. And then they reported midweek this past week that he was dealing with cracked ribs. I don't know if that was totally substantiated, but something came out about that. Mm-hmm. So those two are combining, I think, to really limit his effectiveness. And at the same time, like you said, the blocking is not up to par. So, I mean, that doesn't help when the field is...
When it's tough to get your footing like that, that's just as tough on an offensive lineman as it is a receiver to try to make those types of cuts.
Exactly.
And especially to make those quick snap catches as well. Any kind of acrobatic catch always becomes more difficult.
Yeah. So after throwing for 40 passing yards through three quarters, only one interception, he actually finished with 191 yards thereafter with two TDs and two more interceptions. So,
So the final line makes it look a lot better than what it actually was early on.
And so did that make you feel better about how he finished the game?
Yeah,
going forward?
I don't have Luck in too many places. I think this is the one situation where being a homer and taking Aaron Rodgers before Andrew Luck this year, that might have helped me out in a couple leagues this year. So I'm definitely grateful for that. But if I were a Luck owner, it would put me at ease a little bit. Now, the second half, the rain stopped quite a bit. It wasn't coming down quite as hard, so maybe that opened it up. But there was a point in the fourth quarter where the Colts were down 17 points, and Gruden in the Monday Night Football telecast is all over the place. We need to launch an investigation into Luck. They're not listing him on his injury report. He has to be hurt. That's the only reason he's playing so bad. But almost right on cue, he turns around and leads a 17-point comeback to send this game to overtime. So, go ahead and throw those hot takes out the window there. Andre Johnson, a big part of his effort here in the comeback, finished with 4 catches on 8 targets for 81 yards and a touchdown. Colby Fleener, Luck's Stanford buddy, actually led the Colts in targets with 11. Ended up finishing with 7 for 43 and a touchdown. Got one of the bigger scores of the game to really put that game in reach. Not the typical stat lines for guys like Dante Moncrief, T.Y. Hilton. 2 catches for Moncrief, 18 yards on 7 targets. Hilton was targeted 7 times as well, but only caught one of those passes. Does that say more about the Colts receivers, or does that really say more about guys like Roman Harper and Josh Norman from the Panthers?
Yeah, so Josh Norman was, following Hilton wherever he went on the field last night, Monday night, so it's not really surprising that he caught only 1 of 7 targets. Norman is one of the leaders in interceptions this year, so it was probably a good thing that Luck didn't throw his way too incredibly often and only limited himself to 3 turnovers in the game. So anyway, Griff Whalen too had a pretty decent game here too, right?
Yeah, he was very efficient, caught all 5 of his targets for 48 yards, including a big fourth down catch conversion that to really keep the game alive, which went to review, but the call stood. There wasn't quite enough evidence to overturn it and call it a drop there. So
do you think he's somebody that might factor in the passing game going forward? I mean, he is another Stanford buddy.
You know, you'd think so, but I'm not overly optimistic. Yeah. Just about the consistency on a week-to-week basis. When you've got guys like Hilton, Moncrief, and even Andre Johnson coming through, I think I did see Andre Johnson sitting on the waiver wire in a few of my leagues, and you know, you might want to think about that as him and Luck start to get a little bit more comfortable. He's not someone we explicitly mentioned in our receiver targets today, but he is another name to consider now that we're going through here. Lastly, on the Colts side, Frank Gore, 22 carries, 70 yards, did fumble again, but did not lose it. There was a lot of fumbles last night. You got to take that with a grain of salt, considering the weather conditions here. But let's head over to the winning side, the Carolina Panthers side. Cam Newton, accuracy never really a main, I guess, attribute of him. Finished 16 completions on 35 attempts for 248 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. One of the bigger stories, as usual, is Cam Newton and his rushing yards. Respectable totals on the ground, 10 carries for 41 yards. But really on the ground, it was Jonathan Stewart, and I was really high on him coming into this week against the Colts defense. He had a pretty modest game, 15, 16 fantasy points, 24 carries, 82 yards, and a touchdown. John Stewart, firmly at RB2 for the rest of the year for you, Eric?
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, it always helps out when he gets those goal line carries, too. And I was able to snipe one from Cam Newton, who normally is the one getting them down there, or Tolbert even, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing with Stewart. The one knock is Cam Newton is possibly his biggest threat, but Mike Tolbert's a bowling ball back there at fullback, and he could just as easily get any of those goal line carries. Yeah. And there was a fumble, I believe. The Panthers turned the ball over. I don't know if it was an exchange or a snap. I can't remember exactly, but they turned the ball over inside their own 5 in the second half, so that was potentially another touchdown. You know, and if Stewart, you know, we can play what if all day, but if he scores again, that's a 20-point fantasy day, and that's really more than you could ever ask for.
Oh, indeed, yeah.
Yeah, on the receiving side here, Greg Olson, as expected, once again, the leading target, 6 catches on 12 targets, most targets from any Carolina Panthers. Turned that into 79 yards and a score. Greg Olson, I mean, how many tight ends are better than him the rest of the year outside of Gronk?
Yeah, it's just the you know, sheer volume of targets that he's getting that makes him so valuable. But then you come to Ted Ginn, he gets 10 targets right behind him and only catches 2 of them. Luckily, one of them went for 48, so he was able to salvage a decent day.
Yeah, absolutely. Ginn had a couple drops on the evening, and of course the conditions weren't really doing anybody any favors from a fantasy perspective, outside of maybe the running backs who each had 20-plus carries in that game. Corey/Philly Brown also had himself 3 catches on 5 targets for 42 yards and a score, so he is playing a role as usual. Mike Tolbert got a 40-yard pass hauled in. Usually you don't think of him as much of a pass-catching threat, but it was kind of a play in which Newton was in trouble. Tolbert was in the backfield to pass protect, and Newton kind of slung it to him at the last second over to the side. So, you know, we're not going to start talking about Tolbert as a receiving threat after looking at the box score. Just kind of one of those fluky plays. It's going to be the Greg Olson and Ted Ginn show for the rest of the year, correct?
Yeah, for sure.
Right on here. Well, that's pretty much all that has to do with Monday Night Football outside of, you know, recapping the last bunch of field goals at the end. Vinatieri, a hero as usual. Your standard IDP heroes, Luke Kuechly, 14 tackles, DeQuell Jackson, 13. So we're going to move on from Monday Night Football at this time and get into the meat and potatoes of the show here. It's our waiver wire fab preview for week 9. Now, we've got a pretty exciting preview, a lot of names to talk about, mostly related to injuries, but a couple related to performance and other opportunities. Just a reminder before we get started here, week 9 buys. We've got the Arizona Cardinals, Baltimore Ravens, Detroit Lions, Houston Texans, Kansas City Chiefs, and Seattle Seahawks. So there's quarterbacks, receivers, running backs, big-time tight ends, all that are going to need replacements this week. A couple other reminders, all percentages are percent owned. We took most of these early Tuesday morning, and we're going to give some fab estimates as well for those who use a free agent acquisition budget here. Those are all going to be based on standard scoring, 12-team format with a $100 budget to start out. So please remember to adjust accordingly. If you're really having a tough time thinking of how to bid, feel free to get at one of us on Twitter. We'll be happy to help you out with your questions here. Again, that's at Jakeski52, at ETCat30. But Eric, let's move into the quarterback section of the show. And there's a lot of quarterback news going on this week, but from my perspective, there's not much you can do to act on these news, whether it's matchup or anything like that. So I'm going to hit real quick a couple of the guys that we already have mentioned in the past but still have pretty decent ownership. And first off is Derek Carr of the Raiders, 40% owned in Yahoo leagues, 35% in ESPN leagues. So there's a better than a 50-50 shot that he's available. Personally, I looked at matchups last week and I saw Carr against the Jets, Teddy Bridgewater against the Bears. I played Bridgewater thinking matchup, and that came back to burn me. Trust me, I'm not going to make that mistake again. Can Derek Carr continue to keep this up through the rest of the season?
Yeah, I think he's already kind of proven it. He had a kind of a stinker in week one, less than 100 yards passing, but since then he's had three 300-yard outings and five with multiple TDs during that span. So that's really encouraging, of course. And since his week six bye, he's averaged 311 yards passing with a 7-0 TD to interception ratio. So everything's trending in the right direction. He's gaining confidence and getting that rapport with Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree. It looks great.
Yeah, Crabtree had another spectacular outing on Sunday. 7 catches for 102 yards and a touchdown, 12 targets for him. So starting to build more and more chemistry with Carr. And, of course, we all know what the rookie Amari Cooper is capable of there. And it just seems to me like a case of them having plenty of weapons. And I think Carr is going to be more than useful over the next couple weeks. Just taking a look ahead to his upcoming schedule at Pittsburgh versus Minnesota, at Detroit, at Tennessee versus Kansas City. Then he's got a tough matchup against Denver, but that's a pretty favorable stretch coming up, right?
I definitely like the Steelers matchup too, because they've allowed 317 passing yards over the last 4 weeks and at least one touchdown pass in 7 of 8 games. So that's a pretty good base if you're looking for a, quarterback in like a 12 or 14 team league, a replacement this week.
Yeah, right on. So if you're counting on Carson Palmer, Joe Flacco, Matt Stafford, Russell Wilson this week, all on buys, I think Derek Carr is not someone you just pick up this week, but is very well worth owning the rest of the season. I've got three quarterbacks in the league where I can only start one: Carr, Bridgewater, and Sam Bradford, and I'm starting Derek Carr every week without looking back, for sure.
Yeah, personally, I have a Carson Palmer, quandary in multiple leagues, and wherever Carr is available, I've already picked him up.
Yeah, and I'd say he's worth a decent bid, because after this 4-touchdown week, I don't think he's going to be available. That availability is going to dry up really, really fast. Of course, he's already owned in 2 quarterback leagues at this point.
Yes.
Another quarterback that is most definitely worth a look. Not the flashiest stat line from Sunday against the Falcons, but again, Jameis Winston, 16 for 29, 171 yards and a touchdown. Also, 3 rushes for 24 yards and a touchdown. We always like those rushing quarterbacks, guys like even Tyrod Taylor could be talked about in the same boat here, always helping out. But Jameis Winston now, he's got himself a pretty nice schedule coming up. Got the Giants at home, got the Cowboys at home, then goes to Philly, goes to Indianapolis, then has the Falcons at home, the Saints at home. That's a pretty solid remaining schedule. I think there's definitely some utility to get out of him rest of the way out.
Oh, yeah, indeed. Yeah, like you said, he didn't have a great outing this last time, and he has yet to throw over 300 yards in the first 7 games of his career, but he also hasn't thrown an interception in 3 straight games, so he hasn't actually hurt you in that regard at all, of late at least, if you are utilizing him.
Yeah, absolutely, and this is the second time he's gotten the end zone on his legs this year, so surely worth a look here. Again, he's only owned an 18% of Yahoo, 17% of ESPN formats, so plenty of availability there if you're looking for a stream this week. His price still hasn't quite caught up in daily, I don't think. So there's always a decent tournament play if you're looking to differentiate yourself, I suppose.
Especially since he's playing the Giants, who just gave up 505 yards passing and 7 touchdowns to Drew Brees. So that's something to consider going into this weekend.
Yeah, Drew Brees, that Saints-Giants game, man. If you didn't have half of your daily lineup centered in that game, you probably didn't cash this week.
Yeah, and the Buccaneers are similarly bad against the pass, so this might actually be a shootout in Tampa this weekend.
Yep, so maybe this is the game to stack and target. We'll definitely be discussing that more as the week goes on, but there's surely plenty of viable fantasy matchups here to come in the near future. Some news updates that I alluded to earlier: Jets quarterback watch, man. Both Ryan Fitzpatrick with a left thumb injury and Geno Smith with a left shoulder injury are pretty much considered day-to-day. If they have to, Bryce Petty is up next on the depth chart. I don't think you can get much value out of any of these guys, really. Are anybody worth a look?
Yeah, it looks like we're going to have to see how the week goes on to see how Ryan Fitzpatrick recovers from his torn ligaments in the left hand. And also Geno Smith is dealing with abdominal and left shoulder injuries. So they're so ailing that you almost think they're going to consider bringing in a quarterback, perhaps Matt Flynn, who they had on the roster earlier in the year.
Yeah, that's another candidate in case they don't think former Baylor product Bryce Petty is ready. That's just what the depth chart says there. So
exactly.
Worth keeping watch on in those two quarterback leagues. We'll have more information for you as the week goes on regarding injuries and especially the Thursday preview.
Yeah, one other thing to consider with the Jets, too, is Brandon Marshall is kind of ailing that right now as well. He has ankle and toe injuries from this past weekend. So, and Chris Ivory's been dealing with the hamstring issue, too.
Yeah, just we'll get to some of those replacement options later in the show, but just overall an offense that is ailing quite a bit.
Yeah.
The next bit of news quarterback related we want to touch on. Hate to do this to you every week, but we got to give you a Johnny Football update here. Once again, Josh McCown day to day after taking a beating from the Cardinals. He was, Johnny Manziel warmed up on the sidelines several times in that game, basically getting ready to come in, but they never put him in. McCown kind of played through the discomfort. Long story short, though, they have a short week Thursday. They go to Cincinnati, so Johnny Manziel is probably going to start. I think that's what they're preparing for right now. Of course, the ever-evasive Mike Patton is like, I don't know, McCown's our starter. If he's healthy, he'll play. But I'm not sure, after watching last week's game, if he's physically capable. Let's say McCown does sit, Johnny starts. Is there any situation in which you'd play him?
Yeah, I guess the only situation McCown can be played is if, I mean, you're not going to know. Like, if Manziel is named the starter, only ineffectiveness would probably result on him being on the sidelines, later in the game, and then McCown would be in there, but you can't change anything at that point.
Yeah, exactly. So, I'm just saying, like, if there are, I'd say McCown's almost a coin toss at this point on a short week. You'd like to see him get some practice in. So if they do make the announcement prior to Thursday night, I'm just talking hypotheticals here. There is Johnny Manziel, but remember Johnny Manziel? What happened to him against the Bengals last year? Absolutely destroyed. I don't see any reason.
That was his first career start, correct?
Yeah, I believe his first one, because he came in later in the game the week before. But I don't really see any reason how this is going to go any differently. If anything, the Bengals defense on a whole is greatly improved.
Yeah, exactly. They're definitely a better pass rushing team this year. They've gone from bottom of the pack to near the top of the pack. So, Manziel could be running for his life.
Yeah,
and no matter who's under center, it's probably going to be happening.
Absolutely. And Manziel could be down a couple receivers as well, both Andrew Hawkins and Brian Hartline, who scored, I believe, last week. Both of those guys in concussion protocol. Yeah, Hawkins probably on the tail end of
that's
that.
Right.
Hartline just getting into it. So it's going to be a Benjamin Barnage show, if anything. And Manziel had plenty of reps with them on the second team offense last year. But the matchup's just too tough for me to really consider even picking him up or starting him in any kind of format outside of your deep two quarterback leagues. Speaking of deep two quarterback leagues here, it looks like Colin Kaepernick will be benched for week 9 in favor of the one and only former Jacksonville Jaguar great Blaine Gabbert, who will start week 9 against the Falcons here. Is there much of anything to think that he could produce in this game?
Considering his track record, 53% completion percentage in his career, 23 touchdowns to 24 interceptions in 29 games, I would say no.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Eric.
He's lost Vernon Davis as well.
Yeah, no Vernon Davis. And just you look at that whole roster from top to bottom, they had to bring in Pierre Thomas and Sean Drone this week. It was just brutal overall because the running back situation, Carlos Hyde's got that stress fracture. He's going to need to sit a few weeks if they want to get him right. And Reggie Bush out for the season, of course. And then, Anquan Boldin wasn't active last week, and now they miss Vernon Davis. This is pretty much a punted season here. And unless you're targeting the defense against Blaine Gabbert, Falcons defense could be an excellent play in daily this week if they come at a reasonable price. So unless you're targeting that defense, there's little fantasy utility to find in anywhere on this 49ers offense anymore.
Exactly. It's very,
it's a grim situation.
Yes, exactly.
Absolutely. So with that, that's really all the quarterback news we have for you today. Let's move on to running backs, the most important part of our show. Just want to note, we did mention this last week, David Cobb of the Titans only owned a 23% of Yahoo leagues there. So about a quarter of leagues, I'd say he's going to come off the injured reserve here. This is a dart for deeper formats at best, right? Or do you like the upside there?
It's definitely that. Antonio Andrews only managed 16 for 64 yards in this past weekend's game. McCluster 3 for 15 on the ground. They were also the only running backs who actually gathered in targets. So Bishop Sankey and Terrence West have basically gone out of the lineup. Like, they're not even being played at all. I don't know. I think perhaps the fact that they made a coaching change. They fired Ken Wisenhunt today. Mm-hmm. Could, you know, force them to maybe search for other options that are more successful, like David Cobb. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like you said, a dart, but something that could soon reap dividends.
Yeah, you never know. The new coach comes in and could decide to shake the backfield up and or put everyone in reevaluation mode. But just wanted to get that David Cobb honorable mention out of the way. But the real highlight of today's show is we need to talk about D'Angelo Williams of the Pittsburgh Steelers, only owned in 25% of Yahoo and 28% of ESPN leagues. Now, the reason we're bringing him up is Le'Veon Bell placed on IR. The Steelers are pretty optimistic he'll be ready to go for week one next season. But as far as the rest of this season, no Moss here. D'Angelo Williams going to lead this train in relief of Le'Veon Bell Sunday against the Bengals. Carried the ball 9 times for 71 yards, caught all 4 of his targets for a total of 39 yards. Of course, Le'Veon Bell started with 9 carries as well, so they were splitting until Bell had to come out of that game. Just a brutal injury for Le'Veon Bell. All those owners that were sitting pretty in good shape may not be, and there could be room to make up ground here. But the first step in making up ground is going to be pretty much bid the rest of your fab budget on D'Angelo Williams, correct?
Oh, yeah, indeed. So, yeah, he started the first 2 games of the year when, Le'Veon was suspended for nefarious stuff from last season. Anyway, during those 2 games and Sunday's game combined, he's had 50 carries for 275 yards and 3 TDs, which is good for 5.5 yards per carry. Mm-hmm. And that's also when Roethlisberger was under center, which is, come to fruition. Back, yep. We're back to normalcy, aside from Le'Veon Bell not being around. So it is encouraging. And he also has made an impact in the passing game as well. Mm-hmm. He had 9 receptions for 59 yards on 10 targets in those 3 games. So he'll get you value at every single aspect of, the offense here.
Yeah, he can even be started in an 8-team league, I'd say. He warrants that consideration. He's going to see the snaps. He's going to get the touches. Week 9, they have the Raiders at home. So that's a decent matchup there. There's some talent on that Raiders defense there. But I think this Pittsburgh offense, I'm not saying they're not going to miss a beat without Le'Veon Bell, but they're still going to keep rolling here. They've got plenty of weapons, and that running game is going to take off.
So he's just going to get basically all the touches, all the backfield. So the fact that Oakland has only given up 3.6 yards per carry to running backs doesn't impact him as much because he could get 25 to 30 carries and still have a 100-yard outing.
Yeah, unless the Steelers fall way behind early in any games, I don't see any reason, and even if they do, I don't see any reason why Williams won't get 20-plus carries or at least 20 touches or opportunities to make a play there. I think he's one of the top candidates there in that respect.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, so right now I've got bids of 31, 34, 11, and you know what those all have in common? They're the rest of my budget.
And I'll be soon doing 35 and my one.
Yeah, but if you have $60 left, go ahead and bid $60. If you have $91 left, you might as well wrap it up here because this is the rare opportunity. Now, I know we like to jump guys earlier in the year. In the last couple weeks, I've recommended some high bids. Not necessarily have they always panned out, but if there's any sure thing in fantasy football, this is the exact moral of the story of why you might save your waiver wire money and wait for early on.
Yeah, so when it came to Matt Jones or Charcandrick West earlier in the season, those were entities that we weren't totally certain about, and mm-hmm. Injuries have befallen Jones, and Charcandrick has had a good outing in the meantime, so at least it's paid off in that regard. But this one is guaranteed, like you said.
Yeah, Charcandrick West, I believe he scored now in back-to-back weeks, if I'm not mistaken here. Now, yeah, we did warn that first week after the Charles injury that he might be rough going against Minnesota, but West, just aside here, back-to-back 20 carry weeks over those 2 weeks, over 200 yards, 2 touchdowns. So he's starting to pan out like the fantasy back we'd hoping we would see, but Williams is even safer than that, and you got to go all out here, especially without Le'Veon Bell there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we might get to a few more Steelers later in the show, hint, hint, but let's keep going with the running backs. We've got C.J. Spiller of the Saints. Now, his ownership is actually pretty high, 59% of Yahoo leagues, 57% of ESPN leagues, so it is unlikely you'll see him out there on the waiver wire if he's available. Now, Sunday against the Giants, in a shootout, his numbers weren't particularly spectacular there. 4 carries for 21 yards. 2 catches on 4 targets, 15 yards, and a receiving touchdown. So got you double-digit fantasy points just based on the receiving aspect there. But the reason we're bringing his name up again is because Kyrie Robinson is out for the season after undergoing surgery to repair a broken tibia. So, of course, Mark Ingram is still the man in New Orleans here. But is there room for Spiller on third downs and potentially more?
Yeah, I believe so. Robinson so far has averaged 9.1, or when he was healthy at least, averaged 9.1 touches per game. Mm-hmm. Spiller so far has averaged 6.4 touches per game. Some of those are going to spill over to Spiller. I could easily see him getting 10 touches combined per game, and probably a lot of those in the receiving game, so you could yield a lot of results in PPR formats. Some of that usage is, of course, going to go to Mark Ingram, but yeah, Spiller should definitely get up to that range where he should be effective, you know, most weeks.
Yep, and the Saints went out and kind of executed a backup plan as well and signed Tim Hightower, but I don't see him being used outside of emergency-type situations there at all.
Yeah, when he previously played from 2008 to 2011, he was actually pretty effective as a receiver. I think he had like 128 catches on over 53 games, but that is 4 years ago, so we're not fully expecting him to be a threat right away.
Mm-hmm. So as far as fab budget goes, I don't know what word I just made up there, but $15 to $20 I wrote down. Is that fair? You say you make your primary bid all your money on Williams, but if you still need a running back for this week and need a backup plan, you might as well put a bid down on Spiller as well if he's available.
Yeah, I would say mid-teens is probably the max I would go personally. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'd go as high as 20, but it really depends on how much money I have left too.
Yeah, it's money that you have left, amount of teams in your league. Of course, if you have 12 or more teams, he's probably not going to be available. But really the difference maker for me is whereas he was sitting on my bench before, now I'm going to consider starting him more weeks than not. And yep, it starts out with a pretty favorable matchup week 9 against Tennessee. So, you know, we could see some work there, especially if the Saints manage to get ahead there. It's another home game for the Saints. Yeah, I mean, I drafted C.J. Spiller in a couple spots with Darren Sproles and a Sean Payton offense pipe dreams, and it hasn't really worked out that way so far. But there's potential nonetheless here.
Yeah, we've seen guys like Travaris Cadet come out of nowhere. At least we know what C.J. Spiller can do in his career. So, mm-hmm, you know, he might be returning to his Buffalo days soon in terms of fantasy value.
Yep, I would agree with you right there. There's one point where C.J. Spiller was a first-round fantasy pick.
Yes.
Everywhere. I mean, granted, most people lost heavily in those leagues the year that happened. But nonetheless, his upside was through the roof when he was entering the league, and we might still see a few shades of that and possibly enough for some fantasy productivity. I could see him as a pretty good flex play moving forward.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
All right, another running back we want to take a look at here. We'll head right over to our own Midwest here. Division rivals, Chicago Bears. I just say that because we're Packer guys up here. But I want to look at Jeremy Langford of the Bears because he's owned in just 10% of Yahoo leagues, 4% of ESPN leagues. And the reason being is Matt Forte, his status is pretty much up in the air. The Bears are one of the toughest teams to get actual injury information from. It's said to be a knee injury. We know that. They don't think it's season-ending, but you've heard things like MCL damage, that kind of thing. They haven't officially ruled him out for Week 9, so we don't really know for sure yet. But, I mean, he left the game, and I don't know. I'm still bidding on Jeremy Langford this week just in case, especially if I'm owning Matt Forte anywhere.
Yeah, you definitely want to cover your bases and, you know, don't let a potential starting running back get away. So if you can get him, like you said, for $5 to $10 here, you know, why not? And especially as a handcuff for Forte, if you are an owner of his. What do you think? Do you think he'll be the clear-cut number one if Forte is out? Like, there's no doubt about that?
Yeah, I think they're going to go to him. They might go to Kadeem Carey once in a while. I mean, there's always Anton Smith for third downs, but Langford's got to be the guy so far. He's been the first off the bench when they did need to give Forte a break, and I think that continues there. But the real thing that I'm optimistic about is the matchup here. Now, week 9, yes, he's going to San Diego. It is a road matchup, but mind you, keep in mind that the Chargers giving up the most fantasy points per game to opposing running backs here, 22.1 total to opposing running backs in standard scoring formats here. If that number means anything, I know everyone's got their different formats here. But
yeah, that's standard scoring, but yep, still, it's pretty massive.
Yeah, it puts it in perspective. It's a couple points greater than the next highest team, which is, for your reference, is the Cleveland Browns, having a rough time against running backs this year, as shown once again with Chris Johnson. But anyway, the matchup's very favorable. So if you get Jeremy Langford to start, I think he's a great... Well, he could be a great daily play if we get more information on Forte. Otherwise, you might need to save that knowledge for those Monday, Thursday contests that some sites like to host. Overall, I mean, Langford, I put 5-8 if Forte's healthy just as a safety net. But if we get more Forte news, I could see you upping that to $10, $15.
Yeah, and we'd have to get that news by the end of Tuesday for you to actually up those bids. Mm-hmm. So that's just something to keep in mind. You probably want to be a little more muted just in case. But,
Yeah, if it's a casual bid, 5-8. But if you're a 14 or Forte owner, I'd say 12-16.
Yeah,
just to make sure that you're covered for next week, especially if you're thin on running backs, which is entirely possible after all those guys went down this week.
So while the Chargers did experience a lot of injuries on the offensive side, which we'll mention shortly, on the defensive side, they also had a lot of injuries in the Baltimore game this mm-hmm. past weekend. So they're going to be hammered all over the place, and. Jeremy Langford could very well take advantage of that.
Yeah, it's a defense that I've already heard called one of the worst in the league. And, add a couple injuries to that, and they're not really going up from there, even with the home matchup.
Yeah.
All right, another running back we want to hit on. We're kind of in the dart-throwing, Hail Mary, whatever you want to call it, portion of our show, where there's small backs that you got to consider in deeper formats. Probably not going to pick up and start right away this week, whereas these past three backs we've discussed, you could probably pick up and start right away this week. But one guy who you might want to pick up but take a wait-and-see approach on is Stephen Ridley of the Jets. Now, we mentioned Chris Ivory a little bit banged up. Stephen Ridley pretty much available everywhere, 3% owned in Yahoo leagues, 2% owned in ESPN leagues. Does have a nice matchup week 9 against the Jaguars. We haven't really seen much from him yet. He was active in Week 8, but didn't see any snaps, whereas Zach Stacy saw 25-plus snaps here. Do we start to see the tide turning there if Ivory's unable to go?
Perhaps, but it really is probably contingent on who's under center as well. If Fitzpatrick is actually able to play, they're probably going to have more of a downfield, aspect to their offense, whereas if Geno Smith is under center, I don't see them actually, having much of a deep threat. What do you think? Like, have those saver options for him available, or if it's even Bryce Petty or Matt Flynn, who we talked about earlier.
Yeah, it really is a toss up here. So it's a very risky play, but I think if you're sitting in a 16 team or greater format, and the value on running back, someone probably let Ridley loose. We saw a lot of his potential in New England with Belichick. Some of that got derailed by a couple fumbles there, but he's a decent between the tackle runner. He's proven that. It's just a matter of opportunity right now. And I'm looking. Chris Ivory actually doesn't have an official injury designation. He does. He had a rough game. He had 6 runs that went for negative yards, and we have hamstring kind of by him, as that's what he's been dealing with in the past. So nothing's for certain there. Whereas Belial Powell, we do have an injury designation on him. He's dealing with an ankle injury. Was ruled out, missed last week's game. That's why Stacy got so much work there. So eventually, Ridley has a chance to work his way into the mix, but he might need an injury or two to really spurn relevance.
Yeah,
in that
respect, I agree.
All right, and as we alluded to earlier, with when we were talking about the exciting adventures of Colin Kaepernick and Blaine Gabbert, we want to head back to the San Francisco 49ers backfield. Now, we did mention they signed both Pierre Thomas and Chandron this week, so bolstering depth. And the reason they had to do that, Carlos Hyde, stress fracture in his foot. He was inactive last week. Reggie Bush, torn ACL out for the season. Mike Davis, scheduled for surgery on a broken hand Tuesday.
When it comes to Reggie Bush, it's a torn MCL.
Oh.
His ACL is intact.
His ACL is intact. All right. So, keep that in mind, listeners, when you drop him, of course, because torn MCL, not ACL. So thanks for the correction there.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, you bet. But where does that leave us in the 49ers' backfield? Do you take two guys off the street that are just getting thrown into a new offense, or do you maybe turn to a guy like Kendall Gaskins, who is really the only active, healthy running back on the depth chart following the game on Sunday?
Yeah, so he made his only appearance of the season because of all the injuries to the backfield on Sunday. Mm-hmm. He had 5 carries for 6 yards, 2 receptions on 3 targets for 17 yards. And the latter portion of his game could actually, yield some fruit, because Atlanta's given up a league high 62 receptions for 497 yards to running backs this season. So that's just something to keep in mind. Like, Gabbert might check down a lot because, he hasn't played forever, and that could result in Gaskins actually having a decent week through the air, maybe more so than on the ground.
Yeah, and he's going to be bottom barrel price in all daily formats. He's going to be available in every single one of your leagues that hasn't had instant ad drops go through already.
Yeah.
So maybe worth $0-$1 bid if you miss out on all the rest of your bids. I just, when I'm, the things I've learned from football this year is I want to really know more about the player, have seen them play, rather than look at a name and on a stat sheet. And that just feels like what it is for me with Gaskins, just looking at a name. Now, the potential's there, the opportunity's there, but I haven't seen much of what he can really do. So he's really my last choice. And when it comes to ranking all the guys that we've talked about today, if you're going to take a chance, I'd take one with David Cobb over Gaskins. But nonetheless, he's worth mentioning due to the situation, correct?
Yeah, and then when you're looking at Sean Drawn and you know, Pierre Thomas, is it kind of a just of a stay away at this point and see if they actually factor into the offense?
Yeah, I mean, Drawn was with Cleveland earlier, but he could hardly make it active status on a week-to-week basis here. Pierre Thomas, I'd say, maybe has a little bit more upside, I guess, if you do that, if you go with that check-down logic, especially this week. But it's a matter of getting him acclimated really quickly. And I'm sure he's a smart guy. He's been in the league for a while, but that's tough for anybody to step in on Monday or Tuesday and have an offense down by the following Sunday.
And it's also curious that he took until midseason to actually land somewhere. It took an injury barrage across the entire league at running back to actually make a squad.
Yeah, so there's going to be a lot of free agents who had been looking for homes, finding homes over the next couple of days, especially if teams are unable to get the moves made by the trade deadline, which is this afternoon, or it's actually coming as we're recording this podcast.
Indeed, yeah.
All right, well, fantasy football just got a whole lot more interesting. Week 9, DraftKings will be hosting yet another Millionaire Maker event with $1 million going to first place. Go to DraftKings.com now and enter promo code ROTOWIRE to play free with your first deposit on DraftKings. That's promo code ROTOWIRE for free entry now with your first deposit at DraftKings.com. This isn't fantasy as usual. This is DraftKings. Welcome to the big time. Once again, here for the second half of our show, Jake Litarski alongside Eric Katuri. We are going through the waiver wire preview, and after hitting on all the top running backs, we want to move along to wide receivers here. And there's a few new names to pop up, but we absolutely have to talk about some names that we've discussed in the past, and that's starting with the San Diego Chargers group of wide receivers. Now, the reason this all comes up is because Keenan Allen, who had been a PPR darling over the first 8 weeks of the season, all of a sudden has a lesion in his kidney after taking a tough fall on Sunday. Now, he's expected to be okay long-term, but he will miss the rest of the regular season. That leaves Malcolm Floyd, who scored a couple times on Sunday, and Stevie Johnson, both as top targets for the week, I would imagine. If you're looking, Floyd's more likely to be available, 22% of Yahoo leagues, 28% of ESPN leagues. Stevie Johnson, a little higher ownership, 43% of Yahoo, 29% of ESPN. Do you lean towards either of those two as the main beneficiary there, or should they just both be owned based on what's there in your league?
Yeah, I think they should both be owned, but I think this is going to become more of a socialist offense as well. Antonio Gates is dealing with a sprained MCL, but when he's back, he's probably the number one option. Danny Woodhead has been a ridiculous monster when it comes to targets out of the backfield this season, 49 in 8 games. So I think Floyd and Johnson are going to have maybe a tough time to actually factor into the offense. They might balance each other out. One will do well 1 week, then the next week the other will. So it's just something to, I mean, yeah, I guess you want to take chances on them, but I don't know if you can consistently trust them from week to week.
Yeah, I'm definitely right with you there. I do have Malcolm Floyd, and I remember the difference between Malcolm Chargers, Michael Cardinals. We'll talk about Michael in a second here, but Malcolm, I've got him in a flex spot right now in a league that you start 3 wide receivers. I don't know. I guess I'm just kind of liking it a little bit, and it's the matchup against the Bears on Monday night. That helps things out for me a little bit. I think both of those guys are going to find pretty cheap prices in daily, and one of those two should have a reasonably good night against a relatively porous Bears pass defense.
Oh, yeah. I can't disagree with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so right on. So those two are probably your top targets for the week here. Again, Keenan Allen was third in the entire league here with 89 targets during the first 8 weeks of the season. DeAndre Hopkins led the pack with 113, followed by Julio Jones with 103. So
you're right. Those 11 targets per game have to go to somebody.
Yeah, and exactly.
You know, maybe they'll go to the wideouts instead of Antonio Gates, since he's been used so much anyway in the three games he's been active.
Yeah, of course, Gates, one of Rivers' favorite targets. Also, can't forget Ladarius Green left the game early on with an ankle injury. That'll be another situation worth monitoring as the week rolls along there. So just passing options dropping like flies there, and that leaving plenty of looks for the other San Diego receivers. Even, I mean, if you're in a really deep league, there's maybe Dontrell and Mon. He's got a pretty good yards per target number on the season. I mean, he doesn't have the same volume of targets, but when he is targeted, he seems like he's more of a bigger play guy. Well, he's universally available. A nice matchup. Only caught one pass on two targets for 10 yards. I wouldn't bid. Worth a $0 bid maybe, but I'd say your big bids are going towards the Floyd Johnson train this week here.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, another Floyd, of course. We called an earlier podcast in the year the two Floyds, but we got to touch on Michael Floyd. Of course, John Brown listed as active for the game against the Browns on Sunday, but didn't play a single snap. That opened things up to Michael Floyd, who was able to once again find the end zone, correct?
Yeah, three games in a row now reaching the end zone. He's actually had at least 50 receiving yards and at least three catches during those three games, too. Mm-hmm. So he is becoming a factor once again in the offense after starting the season incredibly slowly. So he's with John Brown kind of dealing with his hamstring issue. It's allowed him to, you know, have these nice outings the past few weeks.
Mm-hmm. And maybe even build a little bit more trust with Carson Palmer. This was a season high in receiving yards, almost double the season high, Michael Floyd. Now, I had been sitting him on my bench for the last couple weeks, and now in a heavy bye week when I need to use him, of course, Michael Floyd is also on a bye week this week. So keep that in mind if you're trying to pick him up. You won't be able to use him right away. But again, I'd say in anything 10 teams or greater, he should be owned.
Oh, yeah, indeed. And the bye week should also give John Brown plenty of time to rest his hamstring, too. So we might be back to the, you know, status quo when it comes to the passing offense for Arizona in Week 10.
Yeah, it'll be tough for him to get it a fourth week in a row, especially when they go to Seattle.
I was just going to say, they're traveling to Seattle.
I mean, but okay, so who's Richard Sherman going to take in this game here? Fitzgerald lines up in the slot, I'd imagine, and Sherman might not see a whole lot of that.
I think he's actually probably going to take on Brown. It would surprise me if he doesn't actually switch around. He stays on one side of the field, too, so that'll be contingent as well. He doesn't actually follow everybody around like Patrick Peterson. So I guess it'll be whoever decides to line up on the, I believe, right side of the field.
Yeah, he doesn't switch sides too much as normal. So right on there. So let's see, a couple more receivers we want to talk about. Sorry, I was having a little mic troubles there. I think we're back on track.
Yep.
We got to hit Stephon Diggs. Of course, another touchdown this week. His skill set's incredible. 78% Yahoo, 70% of ESPN. So his availability is drying up a little bit. Of course, reminder of Nate Washington, 25% Yahoo, 38% ESPN. He's really the benefit of DeAndre Hopkins getting doubled and triple covered on a lot of plays. So there's going to be looks for him. Dwayne Harris scored a couple times in Sunday's shootout. He's pretty much universally available. And, of course, Robert Woods, he'll be back with Tyrod Taylor, also expected back in Week 9. 5% Yahoo, 6% ESPN. Any one of those guys stand out in particular for you?
So when I'm looking at these, you know, four or five options here, Stephon Diggs is a guy that I might actually want to sell high on at this point. He plays St. Louis this coming weekend. They've only allowed three touchdowns to wideouts this year, only 10 yards per catch as well, so that might be something you want to consider going into this week. Whereas Dwayne Harris is actually facing an offense or defense that has allowed 11 TDs to wideouts over their seven games this season, so that might be a guy that you want to target instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even after the big performance, I don't think his price will rise a ton in daily because it's Dwayne Harris. It didn't start too much. Didn't start too high to begin with.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so let's move on to some guys that we haven't touched on too much, but need to revisit, mostly because of Steve Smith. Now, Steve Smith was just outside the top 10 in total targets through this point in the season, but he's got, was it a torn or a ruptured Achilles? It was something with an Achilles injury, but that's going to sideline him the rest of the season.
Yeah, indeed.
All right, so now we head over to Kamar Aiken, even maybe Chris Givens, Marlon Brown. I mean, Kamar Aiken's your top target. He's owning 20% of Yahoo and 21% of ESPN League. So there's a 4-5 chance, 80% chance he'll be available. One caution is you won't be able to pick him up and use it right away here. He's got a Week 9 bye, so going to have to hold on and wait and see there. But are you trying to target Aiken on the waiver wire when he's available?
Yeah, out of anybody that's actually still available in Baltimore for Joe Flacco, Aiken has 43 targets in 8 games. That's, you know, set to increase by a decent amount. Crockett Gilmore is probably the next guy I'm thinking of, who we'll talk about later as well in the tight end section. 29 targets in 6 games. So, yeah, I think those are going to be the top two options for Flacco going forward.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Now, Chris Givens isn't anything more than a dart, deep ball threat. I don't really see him having a lot of utility in season-long formats. I almost think of Givens as like a poor man's Torrey Smith, who's going to be very like hit or miss and maybe get some deep balls here and there, but it's going to be dependent. His value will be dependent on that one deep ball a game.
Yeah, he is maybe averaging nearly 18 yards per catch, but he only has 6 catches on the year.
All right. Yeah, so right on. A poor man's Torrey Smith, and do you really want that on your roster? I guess I'll let you make the call there. Yeah, so,
I'll say no, personally.
Yeah, okay, but yeah, go ahead. Yeah, let the readers know, or listeners know there. But if you're making a bid on Aiken, I wrote down $8 to $12. Is that in the ballpark there for a player like this who's about to see an increased opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, of course you want to look at the guys that we've previously mentioned, the 4 or 5 guys previously. But after that, you know, we're getting to the point where it's pretty stark, not much available. So if you have some cash left, you need a wide out because of 6 mm-hmm. bye teams this week. Yeah, definitely send it his way.
Yeah, right on there. So maybe take a look, but once again, you're not going to be able to use these guys in week 9 with the bye week here. One more guy I was almost going to mention was going to be Brian Hartline, who scored twice last week. Of course, found out on Monday that he is entering concussion protocol, so his availability is looking iffy at best for the short week. If you can take anything from this, these guys are owned already, but Gary Barnage, Travis Benjamin, probably both going to see a lot of looks in the Thursday night game, and one that I would anticipate falling behind early and staying behind.
Yeah, and perhaps even Duke Johnson.
Yeah, Duke Johnson could be in for a decent game despite a rough matchup here. But with that, we can go ahead and move on to tight ends. Now, we just got a quick allude to guys we've already mentioned. Ben Watson still only available in 52% of Yahoo, 53% of ESPN leagues. If he's available, you got to go out and get him, and last week pretty much erased any further doubts about this guy. He's an older guy, but Drew Brees and him seem to have good chemistry, filling as much of the Jimmy Graham role as possible. You like him rest of the season as a tight end one even?
Yeah, I think I like him more rest of season than I do immediately in this upcoming matchup. They play Tennessee, who's allowed just 14 catches for 132 yards and 2 touchdowns over the last 4 games to tight ends. So they've been able to corral any tight end they've so far faced recently. But that rapport, you're right, is really showing itself the last few weeks with Drew Brees.
Yeah, another guy who's on a hot streak, a tight end that we mentioned a while back, is Jacob Tammy of the Falcons. He's someone who I had to jack up his projections just a hair this week. I guess maybe that's a little bit of an exaggeration there. But I bump the guy up just because he's been doing it in a couple weeks in a row now, and he's just available in 6% of ESPN, or I'm sorry, he's owned in 6% of ESPN and 6% of Yahoo leagues. There, sorry to confuse anyone there, but he had another 100-yard and a touchdown game this week, and he seems to be the tight end that Matt Ryan's been looking for, and he could get some sneaky value rest of season here. I mean, this was really his first big game, but mm-hmm. he did have an 8-catch for 94-yard game earlier in the season. But then in between those 2 games, just 6 catches there. So tight end 2, maybe, is he worth a roster spot, or are we kind of backing off?
I think a lot of it will be contingent upon Leonard Hankerson actually coming back from his injury. Mm-hmm. So if he's able to actually play this coming weekend, yeah, then I might be a little lower on Tammy. But if he doesn't look good in practice, we'll find out, which we'll find out about on Wednesday, then yeah, Tammy could be in for a repeat performance, potentially.
Yep, worth a look here. But my top tight end target for the week, for a variety of reasons, and I'm guessing that you're going to agree with me that he's the top guy. I'm not sure. I guess we'll hear in a second. But Heath Miller from the Pittsburgh Steelers, owned in just 28% of Yahoo, 36% of the ESPN leagues. Now, this is something that we all know what Heath Miller is all about and what he's capable of. And it's not only the skill set, but it's what's coming up on paper. He was targeted 13 times last week, caught 10 balls for 105 yards and a touchdown. And the Steelers are going to welcome the Raiders home for a week 9 matchup here. And the Raiders, as we've mentioned a few times, allowing by quite a sizable margin the most fantasy points per tight ends. Heath Miller is a tight end one this week, and he's available in almost three quarters of leagues. You got to go get him, right?
Yeah, we should note that it coincided. This performance coincided with Ben Roethlisberger actually returning to the field as well. So he's been one of the old reliables for Roethlisberger over much of his career, and we've seen it right out. We saw it right out of the gate, rather. And the matchup is pretty decent too, as you mentioned. You know, Oakland is allowing the most points of tight ends this season in standard formats.
Yeah, and Heath Miller, I mean, really, I'm going to use him in every daily lineup this week. That's going to be my staple. I think his price is going to be low after all those weeks with the Vic Landry Jones mess. And now that he's got his guy back, coming off a nice week with 13 targets, the matchup's perfect. I think he's good. You can even throw down $10, $15 in Fab.
Yeah, it doesn't really seem like it matters which tight end is facing the Raiders this year. They've given up touchdowns to tight ends in six of their seven games.
Mm-hmm. So there seems to be a good bet that he's going to find himself open over the middle at some point, and you know Ben's going to get him the ball.
Yeah, and probably used a lot in the red zone too.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt there. I mean, even with that receiving core getting healthier, missing Le'Veon Bell, maybe there's a couple more targets that are – because Le'Veon Bell was always a threat to get double-digit targets, and they got to go somewhere as well.
Yeah.
And not only is Antonio Brown going to get a lot more looks, all of us Brown owners can collectively breathe a sigh of relief that Big Ben is back, but anyone that was hanging on to Heath Miller can breathe a similar sigh of relief because it's looking optimistic for him rest of season. I could see him returning top 10 value.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
All right. Another tight end that we want to discuss who recently had himself a change of scenery, that is Vernon Davis, formerly of the San Francisco 49ers. What a mess that was. Now heading to Super Bowl contenders Denver Broncos. How happy is he?
He has to be incredibly happy, right?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't only team chemistry, but he could just never get it going with Kaepernick there, even after showing some big-time potential early on in his career. Now, 34% of Yahoo leagues, just 16% owned in ESPN leagues. Has a decent matchup going to Indianapolis Week 9, but does he take some time to adjust?
Yeah, I think he does. So Owen Daniels has only had fellow tight end Owen Daniels only has 32 targets on the season, whereas Virgil Green has only 8. Mm-hmm. So they've been using their starting wideouts and Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders most of the time in the passing game. So it might take him a little time to get accustomed to playing with Peyton Manning. So I wouldn't expect it immediately, but down the road, I think it looks good.
Yes, and Peyton Manning looked like his old Pro Bowl self against the Packers last week. It was one of those things very tough for us to watch up here in Wisconsin. But Peyton Manning looked excellent, but let's not forget here the first 7 weeks of the season how great Peyton Manning looked. I mean, just not looking like he has a lot of muscle on any of those throws, having a tough time connecting on deep balls. Now, Vernon Davis I see as a big athletic tight end who a quarterback needs to have an accurate downfield throw in the seams to get him the ball. Do you have confidence in Peyton Manning being able to do that?
Well, he did do it against a, arguably banged up Packers secondary on Sunday night. So, yeah, I can see it happening. I just don't know if I see it happening immediately. I think they're going to have to take a little time to actually get the rapport down. But, going forward.
Yeah, I have a couple desperation leagues with Vernon Davis as my tight end, and I'm going to keep him. Probably not going to start him this week because I want to wait and see how many snaps he gets compared to the other guys and how he's used there.
Yeah.
So something else to work on. Another tight end we got to mention here is Crockett Gilmore of the Ravens. Now, caution, he is on a bye week 9, so you're not going to be able to pick him up and play him right away. But he's available in he's owned in just 13% of Yahoo leagues, 14% of ESPN leagues. And he's another guy that could see some more looks with Steve Smith out for the season now. You think Flacco can get him the ball? And is he worth picking up?
Yeah, he's already proven, I think, so far through half a season that he can get Gilmore the ball. It's just his target count of nearly 5 per game is going to definitely increase. So that, pushes him up the rankings even farther.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you there. And, I mean, I'm in a couple leagues where it's tough to find Crockett Gilmore. Tight ends are at a premium, and he's been pretty much scraped up in a lot of my leagues. But if someone has to make a really tough call this week because of bye weeks and maybe drop Gilmore, then I would get after him and make sure you can do that when waivers clear before the weekend, or especially if you have bench space, just because he's a valid tight end too.
They're on bye.
Yep, they are.
I was just scrambling. Oh, who do they face this week? Oh, it's all right.
Yep.
It'll be a little while before he takes field, but yeah, somebody to target if he is out there.
Yep, got to keep an eye on Crockett Gilmore there. Of course, Heath Miller, top tight end target if available. I'll say Ben Watson's the top tight end target if available, but I think Heath Miller in week 9 probably has a better chance, a little bit more upside with the matchup there.
Yes,
so
indeed, yeah.
There's a quick tight end summary. You know, we'll skip kickers. Other than my advice there is check the weather report, check where they're playing. That always helps with kickers. But I want to go to a couple of defenses maybe that are going to be worth a look here. Sorry to switch up the order a little bit, but because it's the Thursday night game, I want to talk about the Bengals first. They are surprisingly still only owned in 35% of Yahoo and 39% of ESPN leagues. They're going to get the Browns, a banged-up offense on a short week here. They've got to be one of your top streaming plays for this week, right?
Yeah, they've given up, the Browns, that is, have given up 27 sacks this year, and Cincinnati is actually ranking near the top of the heap when it comes to that category this season, surprisingly. So, yeah, I can see whoever is quarterbacking Cleveland or the Browns on Thursday finding themselves on the ground a lot. And the Browns do give up a fair amount of turnovers as well. So, I mean, yeah, it's definitely in play.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you there. Sacks lead to fumbles and interceptions as well, big plays all across the board here. And of course, Manziel's a little bit more escapable than McCown is, you know, being the younger quarterback, but he's still going to take his fair share of shots regardless of, you know, he starts or how it plays out.
Yeah, and the Bengals' D is available almost everywhere too, 35% Yahoo, 39% ESPN. So that's one of those situations where you just stream them because of the matchup.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there could be some weeks down the road where they have some favorable matchups as well. And if they keep up this sack pace, at least that gives you a high ceiling to work with on this Bengals. So, I don't know. I'm finally about ready to cut bait with the Detroit Lions defense everywhere I picked them up. I don't know why I ever thought that was a good idea. But I'm looking to cycle through again, and I'm looking at the Bengals. Another one I might look at that were dropped in a lot of places, including by myself, is the Miami Dolphins. Now, they're owned in just 30% of Yahoo, 37% of ESPN leagues. They do have a little bit tougher matchup. They head to Buffalo to face the Bills. Now, the Bills are going to get Tyrod Taylor back this week. Sammy Watkins still kind of up in the air. They're banged up, but, I mean, this Dolphins defense has looked pretty resurgent under their new head coach here. Do you think that can keep up?
Yeah, except for when they faced New England last Thursday. Mm-hmm. And earlier in the season when Miami took on Buffalo, it didn't go so hot. So I don't know if I totally trust them, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you're right. It's almost, it feels like it's a different team now, but you can't argue with the numbers here. So I don't know. The Dolphins are a team that I saw show up in a lot of waiver wire type publications this week. So I wanted to bring them up just in case because of where they're trending outside of the New England game. But at the same time, maybe not this week with the matchup.
Yeah, you may remember when Buffalo actually traveled to Miami in week 3. Buffalo hammered them 41-14. Now Miami actually has to go to Buffalo, where we don't know what the weather's going to be like potentially at the early portion of November here. So not a lot looks good, but if you can take into keep it in mind that they just went to New England too, so they had a similar weather.
Yeah, and I mean, we like to talk about checking the weather report for streaming kickers. The same applies to streaming defenses. The worse the weather is, the better off defensively it's going to be. I mean, look at Monday night, how rainy it was and how many fumbles, interceptions, et cetera, were caught. You know, maybe a little bit tougher in the kicking game. We saw a costly extra point missed in last night's game. A little tougher to hang on to passes, a little tougher to get a field goal snapped down. So absolutely, we're checking the weather report here. One situation where you won't have to check the weather report is a week 9 matchup between the Titans, who are heading to New Orleans to face the Saints in a dome. Saints available just about everywhere. Now, after they gave up 7 touchdowns to Eli Manning last week, you got to imagine that there's a tough time picking them up and playing them. And of course, they're only owned in 4% of Yahoo and 5% of ESPN leagues. However, they do face the Titans, who are getting shaken up with a new head coach. And we're still not sure about Marcus Mariota, might see a little bit of Zach Mettenberger there. Is that enough alone to make you consider the Saints this week in a tough stream situation?
Yeah, so the Titans O-line has given up 14 sacks over the last 3 games. Titans have committed 7 turnovers over the last 3 games. So a lot looks good for the matchup. And, you know, going to the Superdome has in the past not been a friendly place to play either. So
So you're just crossing your fingers, banking on a couple big plays, and I think Zach Mettenberger will probably offer them up.
Yes,
makes it plenty
Yeah, Mettenberger's 0-8 as a starter in his career, so that's just something to keep in mind as well.
Yeah, take a look at that. And Saints, because of their performance this year, especially only in fantasy will you think about using a defense or praising a defense, even that gave up, what, 49 points the week before?
Yes.
But that might happen here. And the other thing to watch for is Saints are going to be at the bottom of the price list in just about all contests that come out this week. So,
very good point, yeah.
Yeah, you're going to be able to save if you do decide to take. Now, it's risky because you never know. The Saints could still go out there and give up 35 points, but you're banking on a couple turnovers and hopefully something to balance that out there. But I don't know. I don't really think Mettenberger is capable of scoring 35 points. I guess we'll wait and see there. But yeah, they're going to be able to help you with the rest of your daily lineups by giving you an extra $400-$600 to play around with, which can absolutely make a difference in tournaments and cash games.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right. So with that, thank you for listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, brought to you by DraftKings.com, the leader in daily fantasy sports. Use the promo code RotoWire when you make your deposit for a free contest entry today. Also, check out RotoWire.com free for 10 days by going to RotoWire.com/pod. That's RotoWire.com/POD. Once again, I'm Jake Letarski. Find me on Twitter at Jakeski52.
Yeah, and over here, it's Eric Aturi, and you can find me on Twitter at ETCat30.
All right, the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast will return Wednesday.
Guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolored paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.